Thanks, everybody. Like he said, I'm a physical therapist that loves to hang out with athletic trainers. I got to teach for a year in Josh Yellen's MAT program at U of H and help out some in the training room with the University of Houston. Enjoy the heck out of my time there. We're going to talk a little bit about tendon pain. Can you raise your hand if you have tendon pain? If your patella hurts or your Achilles hurts or, you know, or if your athletes have it. Any problems with that? Yeah, and so tendon pain happens a lot in younger athletes, jumpers, sprinters, explosive sports. And then the better they are athletically, the more they're expected to jump, like an outside hitter versus a setter. And then it turns out that tendinopathies crop up as we age. So Achilles tendon issues tend to be more prevalent from 30 to 50 years old. And lateral hip pain, or what your grandparents or your parents may go get injected for bursitis, is probably actually a tendon issue. And so so there's been a lot of research in tendons and what to do about it over the last 10 to 15 years. And so hopefully I'll be able to provide a little insight on some things you can do with your athletes to calm down the pain, and then some things we can talk about for progressing them through the rehab process. So we'll cover kind of tendon pathophysiology. Clinical exam's pretty simple. You poke on it and the tendon hurts. It hurts with use. Once it hurts long enough and bad enough, it hurts at rest. And then we'll talk a little bit about phased rehab. And so, kind of an interesting thing, I'm gonna actually take a different stance than Dr. Bajani when he was talking about regenerative medicine. So we're doing a lot of cool things with PRP and stem cells, but what we're also doing is a lot of research on things that we didn't realize actually have some growth or adaptive potential, and that would be cartilage and probably more so tendon. And so this is kind of the way ATs and PTs get people better, is they basically provide a physical stimulus and your genetics express themselves, right? And so you've probably seen athletes, and you've got two given athletes, both lifting the same amount of weight, but if they put their uniform on, one is completely jacked and the other one is lanky and lean. And then the more you work with them, the one who's naturally jacked probably gets bigger and bigger, and that's just an expression of their genetics. Well, what we're doing in rehab is essentially convincing the body to adapt to stress. So we're providing stress. It's like sending a kid to math class and working on their times tables, and then they get better and better. When we load tendons, they get better. When we unload them, they feel great because we're not using them, they actually get worse. So a lot of times what we'll do, especially as adults, is we'll strain our Achilles and then we'll rest it, and then 2 weeks later we'll try and go do the same thing. But we haven't given it any stress, and it's actually become less able to handle that stress in those 2 weeks. So we take a mechanical stimulus, apply it over the tissues, the cells react, and we actually get a mechanical or molecular response. And so there's a lot of people doing a lot of research on this. And so what I would tell you is tendons absolutely adapt, and cartilage adapts too. And the way cartilage adapts is compression. So if you think about your knee, the more you sit and the less it gets compressed and basically relax, the more it loses its ability to handle load. And so you can overload things, and many times in our society we can underload things. So what we're looking for is a lot of society lives here, especially if you have an IT or desk job. A lot of us when we're younger live somewhere in here, and our body has a lot of wiggle room to handle things. And then a lot of times what we'll see, and you see at most, is when you start fall camp, for those athletes that maybe have been a little less diligent on their summer workouts, and they come in and do two-a-days, or they haven't trained for 3 hours on any given day, and they come in and they've got a 3-hour practice and they've got a week of those, they end up outside their zone of homeostasis, and this super physiologic overload, and most kids don't actually fail. Tendons don't tend to rupture in kids, but they do get irritated, and we're going to kind of talk about those. And so where we're trying to rehab people is we need a stimulus that's high enough that it's overloading them, but not enough that it's causing failure or pain and limitation and ability to develop force. So Jill Cook here is a physio in Australia. She's also spent time in Canada, but if you Google Jill Cook, you'll get gobs and gobs and gobs of research. You'll get great images, and this is one of hers. Basically, we're taking people, their current capacity, and with little micro steps, we're improving their strength. Tendons' main ability is to store energy, and so if we think about the patella and the Achilles in particular, their job is to make it easier on the calf and the quad. And people with good resilient tendons naturally store more energy, and they're naturally more explosive, especially for a given amount of effort. And so we move from energy storage to how we release it. And we're going to look at a couple videos of an athlete who's had a patella tendon ACL, bone tendon bone ACL reconstruction, who's a phenomenal athlete. And you're going to see when he hops, his triple hop for distance, you're going to see big differences in the distance he covers. And a lot of that's mediated by his patellar tendon pain. So tendons can be irritated by compressive loads. So if anybody has ischial tuberosity pain, basically if you've got a high hamstring pain, we see this mostly in adults, it's where it's aggravated. And so your tendon basically wraps around your ischial tuberosity. And so when you're sitting on it, you're compressing it, and that can irritate it. Another thing that can irritate the tendon, if it's already cranky, then if you're doing a lot of RDLs, if you're doing deadlifts, or you're doing really deep lunges or step-ups, that can also add to the irritation of this of the ischial tuberosity. Friction and shear, you'll get this on the Achilles in cycling, you get it quite a bit. Women used to wear pumps a long time ago, and then you get these things called pump bumps, or you get poorly fitting athletic shoes, and you'll get insertional Achilles issues from the friction on the tendon. You also get combined loads. Field hockey, not a huge sport around here, but you'll have people running around bent over. They'll have issues. One of the big things I see with this combination load is runners. Lots of runners end up with IT band pain or greater trochanteric bursitis. And basically what happens in that situation is they've got a foot on the ground, their hip drops, and you're essentially wrapping the IT band around your greater trochanter. So you're compressing that up against the bone, and then you're also putting excessive tension on the outer side, outer layers of the tendon, which is gonna cause issues. So how does this work? So we take a normal tendon, and if we unload it, so let's say we rest, or say we spent the summer doing everything but going to summer conditioning camp. So we've shielded our tendon from stress, and then we take a normal load, or an excessive load, and we get a reactive tendinopathy. So this is kid comes in, goes to volleyball practice, outside hitter, and by the end of the week, the first week of camp, their knees hurt. Both of them hurt. You poke on their patella tendon, it hurts. It's a focal point of tenderness. You've essentially caused a reaction in their tendon sheath. So they're getting extracellular matrix. They're getting kind of your inflammatory mediators. And this is easy to recover from early in the season if you can modify their load. If you can't, then you run into a season-long issue. Where this is particularly tricky is when you get later in the season and people are beat up and they need to play. And we'll talk about some things we can do there. If you don't address it early and they play on this, and continue to play on it for weeks and weeks, then you start to get degenerative changes. So you get changes in the tendon, and those tendon changes become called tendinopathy, right? And so the way we treat tendinopathy is a little bit different than we treat a reactive tendon. But if we can adjust the load and optimize it, then our tendon will adapt and we'll be able to strengthen the muscles around it. The thing about tendon pain is it's honestly like having a stroke. So the researchers that are doing the comparative analysis of what happens to muscle function when you have tendon pain, you literally cannot output the same amount of force that you could for that given cross-sectional area of a muscle. Does that make sense? If you compare it to the other side with a similar cross-sectional area of a muscle and you supraphysiologically stimulate it, you can get a given output based on the size of the muscle. If you do that on a side with tendon pain, you can't get the same out of that same muscle. So it is neurologically inhibited, and there's nothing the athlete can do to overcome that until that tendon pain calms down. So you've got to get them out of that loop. Risk factors. So most of what I think y'all probably see are single session overloads or an excessive training volume with insufficient rest. In aging individuals, it's more of a sedentary thing. And then there's footwear issues, mismatched shoes to the sport. Some people go the minimalist route, which is fine, but you can't run 30 miles a week and switch from a cushioned shoe to a minimalist shoe and still run 30 miles a week, right? You just have to phase into it, or you're gonna give yourself a tendinopathy or a stress fracture. Age, unfortunately our tendons become a little less resilient with age and they need constant loading to remain resilient. Gender, females tend to be a little more at risk than males. Steroid exposure, whether we're talking corticosteroids to calm down things or we're talking anabolic steroids. Systemic antibiotics put your tendons at risk, and then obviously rheumatic diseases. There's interesting things. Diabetes and high cholesterol tend to have pretty bad effects on tendon and make them much less resilient. And things we can modify and treat are there. And so we're not really here to get into all the medical conditions, but there's a lot of other things that can cause tendinopathies or put your tendon at risk. And so tendons do change. If you move out of that reactive tendinopathy phase and into that tendinopathic phase, you essentially get cellular changes that you can see under a microscope. If you've had it long enough, then you get MRI changes. So there's a patellar tendinopathy there. And you can also see it in ultrasound. So this image here on the left is a normal patella tendon. There's your patella, and these are the fibers, right, kind of from here to here. If you can see, here's the patella, the tendon is much thicker, so it's bigger in size, but the number of functional cells is lower. So they call these hypoechoic regions, so there's less cellular density, and those it's basically like a donut hole, or a hole in the donut. And so, if we look at this, we have our hole in the donut, right? So we got some tendon that's normal, and we have some that's degenerative. And then a lot of times what happens is we yo-yo between, we rest that degenerative tendon, and then we go back to doing things, but we don't take a slow, steady ramp up. And so we get a reactive process, and we still have our degenerative hole. And basically, everything that these researchers have found are that you can go back to sport with a degenerative tendon if you take care of it and you load it properly. And a lot of these degenerative portions are never going to change. So we don't base our return to sport decisions on what the MRI looks like or what the ultrasound looks like, because you can have people without pain that are back to performing and you look at their MRIs or ultrasounds and studies, and they haven't appreciably changed. And here's an example, the pathologic lesion, it's not changed over 3 years, but the patient has had no symptoms between January and August. And you still have this degenerative section here. So we treat the donut, not the hole. And if I can leave you with one thing, that'd probably be it. More and more people, oh, here we go. Did y'all see anything different? So I'm gonna play those again.
All right.
Okay, so there's his right leg, and watch him on his left leg. What'd y'all see? So decreased distance, right? So we hopped along the yard markers to make that easy to see. And what else did you see? Did you notice on his left leg, he spent more time on the ground? Like he hopped, and it took longer to gather himself, and with his right foot, he was really rhythmic, and he could store the energy and give it back. So that's what a tendon's supposed to do. It's supposed to help you store energy and release it, help you be explosive. So this is the leg he had, that he was operated on. He had patella tendon pain. It's the best graft if you're gonna play football and return to sport, but one of the complications is anterior knee pain. And so we spent a lot of time doing isometrics and reloading his tendon. So if we look at him here, this is 6 weeks later. So right leg is looking better. He doesn't exactly stick his landings.
All right, whenever you're ready.
All right, and this is one of his buddies who plays cornerback. Okay, so I guess the take home is he looked better. He didn't really cover more distance, but his ability to store energy and get back off the ground was better. That was 6 weeks later. It was a lot of time, and he's still not ready to return to sport there. And he was 9 months probably after his ACL, right? So he's not the norm, and he had a little bit of a slow go of it. But this kid has no tendon pain, just had his knee scoped like 6 weeks before that. Similar type of athlete, very athletic, and he crushed it. Did 9 yards. This athlete here did 7, right? And so until we calmed down the tendon, he couldn't gain muscle bulk. So you're just banging your head against a wall, trying to get him stronger to get him to produce more force, but his tendon kept hurting. So expectations and reality, they often look like this. So check my time here. All right, so real quick, Achilles happens a lot in sports where you run a lot, pretty self-explanatory. It's actually hiding in front of our eyes. So 1.8% probably have it at their pre-participation screens. And it tends to be more of a middle-aged thing than a young kid thing. Unlike the patella tendon, which tends to be very much the 15 to 30-year-old group, basketball, volleyball, tennis, track and field events. Lateral hip. As I said before, most don't actually have bursitis. It tends to impact women more than men. And then how to diagnose it, you can poke all about the greater trochanter. And especially if you get on the top side of it and dig down into it, you're gonna be much more, I guess, direct with your ability to reproduce their pain. Adductor related growing pain, anybody see that? Growing strains, soccer players. If you look up, there's an exercise called the Copenhagen adductor exercise. I'd highly recommend you look it up. It's hard, but it's a fun way to get your team to prehab or prevent injuries that they're growing. And then hamstrings, The funniest thing about hamstrings is you either got to sit on them and make them hurt at your ischial tube, or you got to be fast enough to actually strain them. One of my buddies, he's a really good goalkeeper, and he plays in a 40 and up men's soccer league. And they asked him to play in the field. And guess what he ended up having? He ended up with a hamstring strain. He made two runs. He made two runs from defense, you know, on odd man break, and ended up with a hamstring strain. So he logged 5 minutes in the field before he had to sub out. Y'all can review this kind of in your handouts. This is there too. When we talk about tendon pain, the donut and the hole analogy hopefully is pretty good. The nervous system it needs to be convinced that loading isn't dangerous. And so I would advise using a metronome in your training room or in your clinic. It's pretty easy to download a metronome app. It basically is an external cue, and it's going to be really important later in your rehab, but it also helps with neural drive. And neural drive is the kind of the idea that when the tendon hurts, your muscle can't do what it needs to do. And if you've got a degenerative tendon, it's going to be a frustratingly slow process, so we want to avoid getting there if at all possible. So a few things to not do is don't rest completely. You can use passive treatments as much as you want for the placebo effect or to treat things around it, but just know it's not going to have an impact on the tendon. Try to avoid injections. Don't ignore the pain. It's kind of obvious. You don't really need to stretch your tendon. So if you stretch what's tight around it, that's great, but tendons stretching is just one more form of load. So we want to be particular about how we load it. You don't really need to massage it. So if you want a Graston all around it, like if you've got patellar tendon pain and you want a Graston the quad and put them in a modified Thomas position, go for it. But you probably don't need to add another external load, compression, shear to a tendon that's trying to heal. Don't be worried about your images. Don't be worried about it rupturing, because most of them won't. And don't take shortcuts, because that's where we run into trouble. And then load progression is key. We'll talk about that in our breakout. I'm going to skip a lot of these infographics that you have and you can find online, and get to kind of a key point. As we're going through the rehab process, this is super important. There's all the evidence in the world that if we can get high chronic workloads, that we reduce injury. And that if we can get well-developed physical qualities. So as Emily mentioned, if we can have young athletes that groove their squat form without a lot of load, when they're in middle school and they start lifting weights and they start developing things, when they get to high school, we put them under more and more load and demands, they're gonna actually respond. And so people who actually train longer and harder put themselves at less risk for injury. The challenge is how do we get there? And a lot of times our ramp up is too fast and our rest periods are too short. And so there's ways to manage and measure load that trainers are starting to do more in like the NBA and NFL. And that's simply taking, and in college sports, is taking how long your athlete practiced, and then you multiply it by how hard it was. So you ask them 0 to 10, how hard was that? They say, well, today was a 5 out of 10. And how long did you practice? Well, we practiced an hour and a half. So you've got 90 times 5, right? So you've got an arbitrary unit of 450. And you just log that. And if you see a big spike and that 450 becomes 900, you're gonna be in trouble. Right, and so one of the big things we see with kids going back to sport is they get cleared to return to sport, and then they show up at a tournament, right? And so they play 2 or 3 games or 5 games over 2 days. They haven't practiced nearly that volume going into it, and so don't be surprised if they end up with a reactive tendinopathy or a re-injury at the backside of that, right? And so as we go into returning people to sport, their loads need to match their peers. And so when they get cleared to return to sport, it needs to be like, all right, you need to be practicing at the same volume and the same intensity before you return to sport. Provided it's not a senior and it's their last game or it's the playoffs and you just gotta get out there, right? But if we can manage that return to play progression, this is how we do it. And they've seen it in crazy things like rugby. And they basically all this says is if you can find the sweet spot between training loads and intensity, you're gonna end up reducing your injury risk. So injury rate reduced, VO2 max, so performance measure increased, and their dosage is right in the middle, and that's their training load and units. And so dosing your training loads are great, and I know you're not all necessarily in charge of it, but trainers and strength and conditioning coaches are starting to have a voice at the college level when they have software like Catapult and things that can measure how many sprints kids run, like how many sprints a cornerback runs in a given football game or wide receiver or whatnot. So, and if we're changing loads more than 10 to 15% per week, then our risk for injury is gonna go up. So anytime you see spikes, so the whole boot camp, or if any of you have a daughter or kids that go to dance camp, this is interesting to me. So you practice like 2 or 3 hours a day, 2 to 3 times a week, and then summer hits, and these girls who really, really wanna dance, on Broadway and things like that, they will go to dance camps, and so they go from 9 hours a week of dancing to like 8 hours a day for 6 days in a row of dance camp. And they come out with overuse injuries and their tendons hurt or their joints hurt, and that's an example of just a huge spike in load. So we're looking for a sweet spot for injury risk. So if your training load varies by more than 10 to 15% in a given week, just know that for the next few weeks, your risk of injury has gone up for every athlete who experienced that spike in training load. So how can we train harder and smarter is the big key. When we get to our breakout session, we're gonna cover isometrics and their big role in pain relief. We're gonna cover isotonics, so using a metronome and how do we build strength with a load that the tendon can tolerate. And then we can talk about energy storage, jumping rope, you know, plyometrics, those kind of things. And then how do we decide when they're ready to return to sport. So, and these are the things hopefully that we covered in here. And pain is okay. So when you're rehabbing, if it's 3 out of 10 or less and calms down when you're done, you're okay, you're in a happy spot. But if your load is causing a spike in pain of 5 out of 10, or they come back the next day and they are not better at whatever their asterisk sign is, single leg squat or whatnot, then you know you've overloaded them. That's fine, just go back to isometrics. So.